Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo and my guest Gina Masano. Her phone line is busy, so we're trying to get her to get back to us as quickly as possible. We're going to be talking about intimacy after breast cancer, and it's dealing with your body, your relationships, sexual intimacy. Breast cancer is, well, it's devastating. Cancer is devastating, period. With breast cancer, there are so many things that can happen to a woman physiologically. And believe it or not, some men can also get breast cancer. So it's very, very important that we have an understanding of this. So Gina, for whatever reasons, we have got a challenge. We've left a message for her. So we are waiting to hear from her, so that we can get her right online. Sometimes things like this happen. People call in at the time people are supposed to come on the show, and then it's like, oh my goodness, I've got somebody else calling me. What am I going to do now? So it is punt. That's right. That's what you do. So while we're waiting for Gina, I wanted to share a thought or two with you, and I think that this is so important because so many of us are so pressured. Do you ever feel like when you're in business or you have a job that you've just got to go, and sometimes people get so focused on where it is that they want to go that they forget about interacting with others? I hear that Gina's on the line with us, but before I go to Gina, I want to say this by William Topetta is very, very good. He says, focus on people and the numbers will come. Focus on numbers and the people will go. And I thought that little bit of a quote is so important because that is sort of similar to what we're going to be talking about, relating to something that can really affect a woman's life and a man's life very dramatically. Gina, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you.
I was so impressed with your material. I have not had anything that is as open discussing breast cancer and the aftermath of dealing with it as I have with your material. And I think that your dedication is awesome.
Thank you.
Right here you say, it's dedicated to every woman who has heard the words, you have breast cancer. You are so very beautiful. This is just an incredible book. Now, Gina, you live in New York.
Yes, I do.
You have had to deal with breast cancer not once, but twice.
Yes.
And you were diagnosed it within in 2001, and you went through the gauntlet as far as treatments, everything and anything.
Mm-hmm.
2007, you were treated with a bilateral mastectomy, reconstructive surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation. Now, none of this is fun. This is really intense stuff. And you founded the No Surrender Breast Cancer Foundation, dedicated to improving the lives of women with breast cancer. Now, you're a writer, but this had to have been an incredible experience to sit down and put this material together. How long did it take you, and did it really tug at yourself? I mean, this had to have been tough for you.
Well, you know, it was almost therapeutic, but it was a culmination of years of hearing women talk about their experiences. When I founded the the foundation. We have a website where women can come on a support forum and talk about their experiences, whether they're in the beginning of treatment or beyond treatment. And this topic would come up quite a bit. And so when I was re-diagnosed in 2007 and I experienced the loss of breasts since I had had a lumpectomy the first time, I realized that it was a completely different experience when you've had a lumpectomy vis-a-vis a mastectomy. Mm-hmm. You have a disconnect with your new body. You have these new breasts that are beautiful, but they don't feel like they're yours. And I'm single. So I had to face dating and body image and all of these things thrown at me at one time. What helped me was hearing other women's stories and then writing about it. So I started keeping a diary of things that I was feeling and going through. And because I had had cancer the first time and gone through chemotherapy already, I faced my second time with a completely different attitude. The first time I really let myself become depressed and become sort of a permanent cancer patient. I would not let that happen to myself the second time, and I, you know, made sure that I looked good every time I went to chemo, and I, you know, put makeup on. I had a beautiful wig because I was going to fight this disease and be, you know, as whole as I could be, mm-hmm. because I was so angry that it came back a second time that I was going to be darned if it was going to take any time out of my life again. So all of those things resulted in the book, particularly when none of my doctors told me what to expect. No doctor tells you, you know, how it feels to be a survivor, to deal with sudden menopause because of the chemo and the hormonal mm-hmm. drugs, or to have to deal with, you know, multiple surgeries to rebuild your body, unless that doctor is female and she's been through it herself. So I think the difference with my book is that it's written from a survivor's point of view, because I've been through every single thing that the women I'm writing for are either going through or about to go through. And I think that's the difference, because I speak as a fellow sister to these women.
Well, I have nothing but a deep respect and appreciation for what you've done, because I will share a personal story with you. I had a neighbor many years ago who was a nurse that dealt in, she wanted to become a specialist in radiation treatment, chemotherapy, this type of thing. And I, as long as I live, I will never forget her pulling out her medical textbook. And we got into a discussion about women that were going in for mastectomies and this type of thing. And she showed me the textbook and the surgeries and the various things that they're very graphically portrayed. But what I remember most is that what pulled at her heart as a nurse was when women went in for a mastectomy, and this was a few years back, many times when they took the bandages off, women would scream.
Oh.
They just scream because they didn't have a I can't say it's not compassionate, but there was an attitude at that time, and she said it just tore her heart out. She said these women, when they would look at their maimed bodies, as they saw it, it was so horrific for them that it was a huge trauma. Fortunately, we've advanced enough where we are talking to women, but all of these things that you have mentioned are so significant. And I think it is very, very difficult for men, and I'm not putting men down, unless they have gone through something like this, to really understand what that effect is.
Yes.
And I love what you say in your book, and this is right at the beginning part of your book. You said you literally need to fall in love with yourself and see just how beautiful you are before you can begin to fall in love with others and have them fall in love with you. You need to discover the strengths and features that make you desirable. Once you do, others will follow. And to have a mindset to look at your body, and I know people that have had various injuries of different types or different surgeries that have a kind of response. But this is something that, for example, in our culture, breasts are a very, very big focal point.
Oh, those cultures obsessed with breasts.
Yes. So when a woman goes through this, like you've gone through it, and I've known so many women that have, it's amazing. And your book has wonderful points about how to live in the now, not look back, not worry, because there's always going to be that thought in your head that can undermine you seriously, physiologically, spiritually, mentally, and emotionally. Gee, I've had cancer. It's going to hit me again. It's going to wipe me out.
Mm-hmm.
And you have so absolutely a positive positioning here. You say adverse effects, they're not permanent. And you really, really go to task wanting to empower women. Now, maybe some of our listeners today have gotten a diagnosis, or maybe there's a member of their family. How can they be of assistance? I'd suggest getting your book. But let's talk about some of the things that they are going to deal with these family members. And guys, this is good for you to read, too. It really is.
Oh, it's a wonderful book for men to read.
Absolutely imperative, because you are really walking the walk with your words. Let's talk about some of the things that so many of us are familiar. Hair loss.
Okay.
You know, let's talk about the nutritional aspect. We've gotten a diagnosis. A woman's been operated on. But before she goes into this, she needs to be armed. She needs to be the warrior. And she may not feel very much like a warrior. She may feel like the army of the negatives of the world are just stomping all over her on every level that there is. This can be just devastating. Let's talk about how she can fight.
Well, particularly when you're first diagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
You are hearing these words that you've never heard before, and they're talking. You hear surgery, you hear chemo, you hear radiation, you hear pathological descriptions of what's wrong with you. You're in a tailspin, and the only way to get through it, now I'm speaking to women who have just heard the words, they have breast cancer, is just one moment at a time. Don't think about next month. Don't think about when you're putting the Christmas decorations away that you're not going to be unpacking them next year, because you will be. You just have to take things one moment at a time, and that helps you regain some control over the chaos that's surrounding you. Then when your battle plan starts to take place, and you have to look at it as a battle plan, and your general assembling, you know, your army, you know what kind of chemo you're going to do. You know when your surgeries are. You know you've gone to a breast surgeon and discussed it. If you're going to have reconstruction, you've met with the reconstructive surgeon. Suddenly things start to fall in place, and you're gaining more control because now you know what the situation is going to be. So you've had your first chemo, and they tell you, in about 3 weeks, you're going to lose your hair. Do not wait for 3 weeks to go by until you first start feeling pain on your scalp and your hair starts to come out. What you need to do is go to a wig salon or a hair salon that can help you with a wig and pick out your wig before anything starts, even before your first chemo, and get it dyed the color of your hair. Get it styled the exact way you wear your hair now, because when your hair starts to come out, it hurts at first. And then you just want to take it off because it's not comfortable, and it doesn't come out all at once either. Some women believe that to happen, but it doesn't happen that way.
Mm-hmm.
It gets annoying and irritating, so you cut it shorter. What I did and what I recommend to people to do is when you get to that point, it's usually about 3 or 4 weeks, I went to the wig salon, had them shave my head, And so all of it was gone. And I had my wig. I named her Natasha. I had Natasha put on my head, and I looked like me again. So when I came home, one of my neighbors was sitting on the porch, and he said, "Oh, your hair looks great. Did you just get it done?" And I said, "Yes." He had no idea. And I went inside, and it really helps with that shock of losing your hair. Some women, and I wrote about one woman in the book, she never let her husband see her without a wig on or a scarf on. She just didn't want to share that part with him. She didn't want to look sick in front of him. Which, you know, people, well, some women don't even want to do a wig. Some women want to wear scarves, and they just, or some are brave and have incredible self-confidence and will go bald, and that's great. I just, you know, think that that's terrific. But, you know, you have to look at it as the hair loss means that the chemo is doing its thing, and the what happens with chemo is the rapidly dividing cells, which are the cancer cells, are being killed off. Unfortunately, in friendly fire, your hair is a rapidly dividing cell, so that, you know, those cells die off and you lose your hair. Well, that also means your chemo is working. So you have to think of things as a positive. Every time you go and get your chemo infusion, think, okay, you know, go in there and kill every cancer cell, you know, you can find. The only way to get through this is to get mad at cancer and to just want it out of your body, and you'll do anything you can to get rid of it. And see, the first time I did chemo, I was the poor me. Oh, you know, I'm never going to make it. This is terrible. And I was miserable. The second time, I fought it like a tiger, and I was much better emotionally. And I really handled the chemotherapy side effects much better, too.
Now, you bring out nutrition in your
yes.
book. Because this is so important. This, I'm so pleased to hear emphasized, because I know how important it is in everyday living. And when you, your body is bombarded with all of this toxicity, you've got to help your body fight. And not only do you go into nutrition, you go into the fact that you're going into menopause, you know, if you're younger and this hits you, you're going into menopause, you're going to have hot flashes, and you've got to educate yourself so that you're going to give your body something to fight with. And nutrition gives your body the fuel, the tools to be able to build and support healthy cells while, you know, the old ones are being, the diseased ones or the malformed ones are being killed off. I really think also your emphasis on exercise, especially when it comes to the lymphatic glands, is absolutely right on. Absolutely right on. And I really think that these points are excellently stated. You say having a metastatic disease does not mean happiness and love are no longer allowed in your life. You're not a milk carton. You don't come with an expiration date. I love that sentence because I think that is really what has to be put into people's heads. They don't come necessarily with an expiration date unless they want to buy into that.
That's
and you
right.
do have to be a fighter.
Well, you know, with metastatic disease, you know, those women who go through it and they hear, well, you know, you're stage four and there is no cure. It's almost as if they're just being sent off, you know, well, okay, we're done with you. And it's so wrong. I like to say that I believe there's a stage five, because I'll tell you a little story. In October, we had our first fundraiser for the foundation. And I don't like October emphasizing some of the way they do the breast cancer is not exactly something I like to, I don't like when people say happy, you know, Breast Cancer Awareness Month. It's not really a happy month. So this fundraiser was called There and Back, a Celebration of Survival, and we had a fashion show. Four of my models were women who had metastatic disease, and they put on these dresses, and they did this fashion show, and they looked absolutely beautiful, and they were brilliant, you know, vibrant, living, fighting women, and they're doing fine today. So when you are diagnosed, whether you're diagnosed early stage or late stage, or you develop metastatic disease, you are still a woman. You still have fight in you. You still have life in you. And if you live your life looking forward and not with the what ifs and, oh, this is going to happen, you just keep living your life, you will have a better life and you will survive. I mean, no matter what, no matter how long a period of time we have on this earth, you know, there's that quote, on a long enough timeline, everybody's survival is zero. So if you keep that
That's
in perspective.
That's the truth. That is the truth, because none of us have got, we do have that point where our chassis wear out, and I'm sorry, they're going to have to be replaced, like a friend of mine used to say, who was in her 80s. Now, I want to talk about getting to know the new girls. Now, this is about reconstructive surgery, and I really like that title. But I think that this is important to discuss, because this is a very, very serious thing to look at. And you mentioned it right off the bat, saying that when you have this done, they're not going to feel necessarily natural. But let's talk about the options that women have and how to deal with them.
When I lost my breasts, I remember first meeting with the breast surgeon, and I said to him, you know, they had told me I'm going to have the bilateral done because I had already had breast cancer on the other side, and the new breast cancer was on the right side. And I said to him, well, will you need my, you know, old films? Thinking he would need to look at the old mammography films. And he said, I won't need any pictures. And I remember how cold that felt to me, because it was as if he was saying, oh, I'm just cutting off your breast, and, you know, that's it. That's how he made me feel. Well, what the breast surgeon takes away, the reconstructive surgeon gives back. And a good reconstructive surgeon can change your outlook tremendously. I remember meeting with my, I had to meet three to interview. You should always, you know, interview three. And I met with the first one, and I said to him, I know I'll never look good naked again. And he said to me, why not? And he was so certain about that. Mm-hmm. And I liked that. I liked how confident he was. So when I went in for my surgery, I looked down, and they were drawing lines all over my breasts, and I was saying, okay, well, this is the last time I'm going to see them. And it was bittersweet. But then I also could see the lumps through my skin that were cancer, and I didn't want to look at those anymore.
Mm-hmm.
When I woke up, and they allowed me to get up and go into the bathroom, I opened up the gown, and I looked down, and I had cleavage. And it was a wonderful thing to be able to see cleavage under the wrappings they had on me. And I had this tremendous feeling of being clean, because I knew that the cancer had been taken off of me. And now I had new breasts. I want to explain the different types that you can get. I had originally implants done as my reconstructive choice. But when you get breast implants as reconstruction, first they give you something called a tissue expander, which is sort of a hollow balloon that they put inside underneath your pectoral muscle, and they fill it up with saline about every 3 weeks, and they expand your pectoral muscle so, you know, it stretches so it'll be able to accept an implant. So you are developing every time you go and have these fills done, and it's actually quite interesting to watch. Then when you're ready and you're done with your chemo and you're able to have another surgery, they do the exchange surgery and you have your soft implants, and they look wonderful. And if you watch any Hollywood award show, the implants you get with breast reconstruction, you know, you have the same cleavage. You look just as good in a gown as those women do on television, I'll tell you. Mm-hmm. The other choices there are is using your own skin. If you have enough belly fat, they can take your abdomen tissue and they can recreate a breast from that by just very delicately teasing out the veins and reconnecting the blood vessels to your chest blood vessels. And those breasts are very soft and natural because they're your own tissue. They can even take your back muscle and slide it under your arm and use your back muscle as breasts. So they have all these options. Let's say you can't do breast implants. Okay, well, they can use your belly. If they can't use your belly, they can use your back. If they can't use your back, doctors are now using, if you have a big buttocks, they can use part of your buttocks. So you have a lot of options. But the thing to remember with breast reconstruction is it's a work in progress, and as I say in the book, it's an artwork in progress. Every surgery gets you towards a beautiful finished product. So you have to be patient, and you have to go and get everything done. Get the nipples put on, have areolas tattooed on, and when you're all done, the scars from the mastectomies are faded, you have beautiful breasts. And then you have to take time and say, okay, these are now mine. And, you know, there is a natural disconnect saying, well, these aren't my old breasts. But they're your new, healthy, clean breasts that aren't trying to kill you anymore. And so once you learn to accept them and see how beautiful they are, then you feel more confident. Now, I have to mention, we're talking about breast reconstruction, but there are many women who choose not to reconstruct. And there is a tremendous amount of strength in that, I think, because you're so confident in yourself. And you are still feminine. When you look at a Degas painting, all those beautiful ballerinas, they don't have any chest, but they are so delicate and feminine. And there are wonderful ways that you can use forms and prosthetics to, you know, recreate a breast if you have one breast and you have the other one removed. So there are so many options out there that you should explore each one. And if you decide at first not to reconstruct, and then further down the road you think, you know what, I think I'd like to, that option is always available to you. So don't rule it out. And by law, insurance has to cover you getting that surgery done, no matter how many years after you change your mind.
Will you stay with me for another 15 minutes? Because I'd like to go in. Wonderful. We're going to be taking a break shortly. And my guest, Gina Massano, has put out this book, Intimacy After Breast Cancer. And one of the things that I think is so important to discuss is your spouse or a significant other that is in your life, because it can be very, very traumatic for them. Because you make a comment in your book about how men really like to feel like they can do something, and when this kind of a situation occurs, they feel totally helpless. There is no book out there to educate men, except in yours, that I've become aware of, that I think is so well done. And I think, guys, if you're listening to this and you have anyone in your family that has had breast cancer or is perhaps diagnosed with it, this is a book that is going to give you an insight into what a woman has to go through so that you don't have to be uncertain. We're going to be discussing that. We're taking a break. This is Donna Sebo, again, my guest, Gina Massano. We're going to be coming back, and we're going to be talking about, because I think it's so important to discuss this, what do you do? How can you work with or assist, besides giving them the book, assist a loved one in dealing with what you're going to be going through. You need them as much support system as you possibly can get. Gina Massano, Donna Sebo, we're coming back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. Four out of the last eight Nobel Prizes in Physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Rio, host of the Hooked on Raw radio show on rawenergyradio.com. If you're interested in the raw and living food lifestyle, along with the real story of what's happening to our health freedoms, and you don't mind a little controversy, listen to my radio show and podcasts on rawenergyradio.com. Each week, we interview guests and cover topics you won't hear on mainstream radio. Get informed, healthy, and involved. rawenergyradio.com.
Hi, I'm singer-songwriter Fremont John, and you're listening to BBS
Hello,
Radio.
Hello, this is Donna
Sebo. You know how short time really is.
And I'm hearing something in the background. Gina, are you with me? Gina? I think Doug is trying to put her in on the phone line. Anyway, what I wanted to do, Gina's going to be joining us in just a second. She's on the other phone line, and there we go. There we go. The little gnomes were playing games with the telephone lines and the connection. Okay. Gina, you have in your book something that I really like. And we're going to be talking a little bit about married and single when it comes to the men in the lives. But you say a real man is one of those things worth waiting for. A real man will see the beauty in you, a beauty that is enhanced by all you have endured. And you mention a poem by William Butler Yeats that says, when you are old, how many loved your moments of glad grace and loved your beauty with love false or true? But one man loved the pilgrim soul in you and loved the sorrows of your changing face. Beautiful words. Oh, let's talk about the significant other. This is really, really tough. What is it that they do for the husbands of women that are going through this? Do they have counseling? I mean, what do they do for the guys?
Well, first of all, you know, as you had mentioned before we went to the break, with a man, if his wife or significant other is diagnosed with breast cancer, you know, men are doers. So, you know, there's no ladder to get, no pipe to fix, no carburetor to take, you know, care of. This is something completely out of their hands. It's affecting the woman they love. They don't know if she's going to live or not because, you know, everybody hears terrible stories of, you know, your cancer, you immediately think the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go into sort of this state of, you know, they can't do anything. They don't want to overdo it. They don't want to seem freaked out, even though they are. They don't want to scare their wife. And then they also have the feeling that everybody's watching them about seeing how well they are taking care of their wife. So I think a man gets it from all angles.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing a woman can do is, first of all, give him a job. Tell him, okay, I want you to be my researcher. Okay, if you research things for me, that'll be great. If he can drive her to all her treatments, that's wonderful. It's up to the status of the marriage. I'm going to talk about married people right now because
mm-hmm.
one thing is really important that I have to mention because I speak at a lot of groups and I also have my support forum online. Women who have their marriages end during or right after a breast cancer diagnosis immediately blame themselves and say, oh, it's the breast cancer. It's because I don't have breasts anymore. No. Every time I hear of a marriage that's ended, quote unquote, you know, inverted quotes here, because of breast cancer. It's not so. They look back at their marriage, and it wasn't good beforehand, and this was just an excuse for the man to, you know, skedaddle. I don't know of any woman who's left her husband because he has a breast as a cancer diagnosis. So women have to be kind to themselves and stop being so hard on themselves, thinking that because there's something wrong with them, it caused their husband to not react right. That's in his head. You have to deal with how you're going to get through every day. Cancer is not something you ordered on eBay. It wasn't a choice of yours. So it happened to the whole family, and as a family, you have to fight it together. And that means you have to take care of yourself first and draw boundaries and say, okay, this is what I need you to do, but I don't need you to be asking me, you know, every 5 minutes, are you okay, are you okay? This is what we're going to tell the kids, and I don't want them to know too much, or this is what I want the older ones to know, but the younger ones don't need to know this. And just, you know, the type of marriage and relationship you have dictates how this will go. But the best thing is communication. Once you start to talk about it and what his fears are, which number one fear is you're going to die. And once you explain to him, look, I'm doing everything I can to fight this, and the odds are in my favor, and if you are my partner in this fight, then you will help me survive. And that is easing his mind, and it's also giving him a job in his head. Okay, I'm a partner in this fight. Let me see what I can do. I actually, Donna, have men who come on my site. The women, their wives don't do the internet, so they say, well, I'm here for my wife. I want to learn everything I can about breast cancer. Can you ladies help me? Tell me what I should do. And those men are great because they do all the research, and then they'll write, you know, a couple of months later, she's doing great and she thanks you all so much. She never even came on the site, but he took care of it for her. So that's really, you know, the best way. And you know, you decide also how much information you want him to know. If you don't want him to see you bald, you don't have to. If you don't want him to, you know, be inside the exam room with you when you see your oncologist, that's perfectly fine. If you want to keep some level of mystery and, you know, which also helps in the romance department alive, that's a perfectly fine thing to do. He can wait outside. So you have to make decisions for yourself, and you're number one here because you're the one going through it, because no one can go through this for you. And once you decide how you're going to fight it and what makes you comfortable, then you can start delegating who does what and how you want things handled.
You have some wonderful stories in here. Before I get into one of them, one man said about his marriage that his wife, she wasn't his wife, she was his girlfriend, and she always will be. He had this attitude about her. One, he loved her deeply, but he really looked at her as a very significant part of his life. And there are the schmucks out there that can't handle it, but, and I say schmucks, and that's being derogatory, excuse me, but as you mentioned, many times the relationships that women have been in have not been healthy anyway.
That's right.
So when you're dealing with the cancer, it sort of throws the, what you call, separating the wheat from the chaff. You get down to really the true realities of what your life is, period, right here and right now. The games are over. The illusions suddenly evaporate, like you wouldn't believe, very, very quickly. But you had a couple in here, and I just thought it was a fabulous story because this husband, when he found out, and he loved his wife dearly, when he found out what had happened to her and what she was going to go through, she made a point of making sure he saw everything as it went along. And even when she was going through breast reconstruction, it was something that took a lot of the fear out of him, because she didn't hide anything. Now, this is just different from what you've expressed about women have a choice of how they want to do it. But she was very open about it. And it was very, very important to him that she was that trusting and caring enough to say, this is the way it is. And he had the awareness that this is significant, because his wife had a chance to live, well, maybe 20 or 30 years ago, it wouldn't have been such a good verdict.
That's right.
So his position was really great.
That couple is an amazing couple. And I think when he was talking to me with tears in his eyes and also smiling because he was so proud of her, he came away as someone who I would say is someone who sees her pilgrim soul, because he saw the changes she went through and he loved her even more for them. And when I speak at groups and there are women who are just out of treatment, I look at them and I said, do you realize how strong you are, what a warrior you are, and you know, how amazing you are? Look at what you've just done, what you've just completed. And they sort of sit up stronger, taller in their chairs, and they look at me as if, I never looked at it that way. Mm-hmm. Heck, I really did go through something, and look, I'm still here. And once they start to see themselves that way, they project confidence. And when you project confidence and you really feel that way, then your relationship with either your husband or your significant other, or if you're going out on a date, there's nothing sexier than that. And if you feel proud of your achievements, and let me tell you something, hearing those words, getting the surgery, going through chemo, everything, to get through that and, you know, still take your kids to school, go to work, and do everything you have to do, you are a superhero. And once you realize that, you begin to smile and you say, okay, yeah, I'm pretty strong. I didn't realize it. I didn't know it before, but I am. And that is a sexy, confident way to project yourself, but you have to feel it yourself first.
I agree. And I know we're getting close to running out of time here. I like your statement in your book, and this is for single or married women, and I know we're not going to have enough time to go in for single women, but this is important for anybody. You are a work of art, not a science project. Art is lovingly created. It takes time, and it shows. And that is what I think, when a woman can be aware of that, when a man can be supportive in that way, because sometimes it is very traumatic for a woman to go through this, and not sometimes, frequently. Let's just be honest about it.
Always. It's a traumatic experience, no matter what.
You know, I've talked with some women where they said, I can deal with it, and they dealt with it, but most women aren't going to have that attitude. This is something that's very scary. It's very, very frightening. So your book empowers people. Your book empowers through education. It empowers through story. It empowers because you yourself have walked the walk. And you have a website. One is NoSurrenderBreastCancerFoundation.org. That's www.NoSurrenderBreastCancerFoundation.org. And you have a chat room on there. You've got so many different things. Gina, I know we're just about out of time here. We have about 30 seconds. Do you have a comment that you would like to leave in the way of a thought for my listening audience?
If you have just been diagnosed with breast cancer, do not think your life is over. You will get through everything they're about to ask of you, and you will be on the other side of it, and you will be stronger than you ever thought you would be. You will get your life back, and you will have a stronger life, a stronger outlook, and if you just keep fighting and looking forward, it's going to be okay. And that's the number one thing I wanted to hear someone tell me back in 2001, and it's true because I've done it twice. So you will make it through this. It, you know, chemo has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Your hair is going to grow back. You're going to get your body back, and you will get through this. And that's the number one thing I want women who've just heard those words to know.
Intimacy after breast cancer is what the doctors never tell you. Dealing with your body, relationships, and sex. My guest has been Gina Misano. Go to her website. It is NoSurrenderBreastCancerFoundation.org. Gina, it's been a delight having you as a guest. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I wish
Thank
you the best
you.
Of success. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Rio. I'm the author of the cutting-edge book, Hooked on Raw. I want to give you and your loved ones the gift of optimum health. So when you order my book, Hooked on Raw, which has over 350 delicious, healthy recipes, I'll include my new DVD, What's Not Cooking in Rio's Kitchen, for a half price. Just go to my website, rawfoodinfo.com, and click on Holiday Special. That's rawfoodinfo.com. Click on Holiday Special.
Hello, this is Donna Sebo. Welcome back. I want to let you know who's going to be on the air with me these next couple of days, and I'm hearing some music of some kind in the background. There we go. The Art of Navigation. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about Felix Wolff. This is a man that studied under Carlos Castaneda, and I think you will find him quite interesting as a protege of that very famous gentleman. And then on Friday, we're going to be talking about bringing progress to paradise. We're going to be traveling with Jeffrey Raithley to the top of the world, which is called the Himalayas. That's right. And all of the peoples in various villages, the world is reaching them, and it's reaching them through technology. How is it affecting their lives? What did Jeffrey discover? Well, we're going to be discussing that on Friday. And by the way, if you want to find out about guests that are coming up on the Donna Sebo Show, be sure to go into the archive portion, and you will be able to listen to past shows. But more than that, you can also tap the button that says Show Information, and you'll find out about those people that are coming up as guests on the program. So you'll be able to see a little bit of a write-up about them and find out exactly who they are, what we're going to be discussing, so that you can be informed. I wanted to share some... Oh, let me give out the phone number, because the phone lines are open, 888-815-9756, if you wanted to give me a buzz, 888-815-9756. Well, with the time remaining, let me just give you some fun stuff here. 2011 numerology, are you interested in any of that? Numbers are fascinating, and I got a birthday card from someone that said, Donna, this is such and such a number for you, and this is what it means. So they're really into numerology, and I thought this would be fun to share with you. So what you do, and if you got a little piece of paper, you can do this all of yourself right with me right now. You take the month you were born in, the day you were born, and, of course, the year 2011. And what you do, you add up all the numbers, and then you add them until they become a single digit. For example, if you were born on August 29th, you would come up with a number when you add your 8, your 29, and then the 4, which is 2011, comes to a 4, comes to 23, and 2 plus 3 equals 5. So your personal year, this year of 2011, would be the number 5. So that's how you look at it. So let me just share with you, when you do this quickly, you might be able to do it in your head, you may need to write it out. If you come up with the number 1, means that this is a year of new beginnings for you. You finished a 9-year cycle, you're now back ready to start into a brand new direction, fresh starts, brand new opportunities, new ventures. It's a great year for those of you with the number 1 as your numerological forecast for the year. That is really, really positive. You got to expect opportunities. Expect that your efforts and everything that you've grown with for the last 9 years are really going to come into a positive opportunity of positioning the reality that you want to see happen. If you come up with a number 2 for the year 2011, just let things be. Relax and go with the flow. You want to build. You want to strengthen what you've already got in your life. Don't try to force things. Be patient. Aha, big word, the big P word, patience. And if you focus on fine-tuning and enjoying the here and now, you're going to have a much more peaceful year on all levels, personally and otherwise. If you come up with a number 3, social butterfly, you are going to have a good time this year. You're going to be able to interact with friends. New friends are going to be coming into the picture. Relationships are going to be flowing very easily. You're going to feel outgoing, really more extroverted in everything that you do, and creativity. Oh, this is just going to really flow for you if you're a number 4 for the year 2011. Excuse me, number 3. Number 4, you want to focus on improving yourself. This is the time to go to work. If you come up with a number 4 for this year, you know that you've got a lot of endurance, you've got energy and perseverance. So changes, you're going to be able to make them much more easily than in the past. And you're going to be amazed at how much you accomplish this year. If your year number is 5, you have to deal with the unexpected. Don't be afraid of change. Be open to whatever broadening of your horizons could possibly come your way. And you might find opportunities to do things in a way that you'd never expected. Explore. Take chances. See new places. Try new things. You're going to really grow as a person. If your year number is 6, you're going to deepen your connections with people. You're going to find that you want to have more open and in-depth communications with the people that are closest to you. Contentment, love, and togetherness. This is what you're going to focus on for this year. And harmony is going to be very important to you. If this year is a 7 for you, take time for yourself. You need to release stress and tension. It's a great period to really work on meditation. Just give yourself downtime. This is okay. If you're a 7, you're going to need energy, and you want to take care of yourself. 8, go for the gold. It's a power year. You're going to have energy and confidence. You've got everything going for you right now, so move with opportunities when they come your way. If 9 is your year number, reflect on what you have done. You're at the end of your 9-year cycle, and this is a year of introspection. Reevaluate what is most important to you and think about what does and doesn't bring you joy. Release the garbage that you don't need. It's that simple. This is Donna Sebo. I know that we're out of time. Thank you for being with me. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You are the power in your life. Don't ever give that to anybody else. Nobody else has the right to take that from you. You own it, and you can make your life what you want it to be. It does take work, but this will be your story, your experience, that one day you may be able to share with someone else and inspire them, whatever their difficulties might be, to realize that hurdles can be overcome, and there are successes on many, many different levels. Donna Sebo here. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.